Hello everyone and welcome to episode 12 of Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, following on from episode 11 where I was pretty much talking to myself and recapping. I have got a friend back with me this week, thank God. So everyone please welcome Jordan Robinson. Jordan, say hello.
I'm really, really happy that you count me as a friend now.
Of course.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, he also pays me and books me for stuff. But, oh wait, you didn't even pay me.
Exactly. It's a charity gig. You don't
charity gig. Yeah, so I was recently opening for Jordan on the second night of his Pig Heart show. So you did one night and then decided they had the second because they...
So we put the first night on in the Sunflower and the first one sold out. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to put on a second night. And that really struggled to sell. So.
And then yet we ended up with...
Another sellout, yeah. And more than the first night, actually. So.
Yeah, on a Tuesday night. Which was, I mean, when you were like, we're doing it on a Tuesday. I was like... Okay, who comes out midweek, but there you go.
Exactly.
But that's because I'm old and have to work, so...
True.
Why. So yeah, Jordan just finished the first two shows. So your first main show, first headliner show, yeah?
Pig Heart. First proper one. I did a split show at the Comedy Lab this year with Mark McCartney, and that was just like basically half an hour material each. And from June to now, I have 10 more minutes of material, therefore I put it in a show.
I have about 10 more minutes of material from... June 2016 tonight, so you're doing okay.
Perfect.
I was actually great fun. I really enjoyed it because it was a crowd who probably, I don't know if it was like some people who knew you, but you were really surprised. You're like, I don't know most of these people. That's brilliant.
There was like 20-25 people I didn't know, and I was like, oh, what? And that was the real worry for me when I put the show on originally, because I was like, all my family and friends are just going to buy tickets and it's just going to be like an echo chamber of like, oh, Jordan's great, we're going to laugh at anything he says. Yep. But when it was like the people you don't know and they're laughing and stuff like that, you're like, what? I may be actually funny. I'm not quite sure yet, but I think I'm funny.
It's kind of weird because you're in that position when you, especially doing your first show, where you're like, right, I want this to sell. Of course, I want my family and friends to come see me.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But I really need some strangers to verify that I'm
100%
funny.
Yeah,
this isn't pity.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if this is pity, this is a perfect reason to be a stand-up comic.
Yeah, it's like exactly my feelings going into it. Like I was just. Number one, wishing it would sell out like just instantly, so I didn't even have to worry about it. But I was checking like the Eventbrite page religiously, like every single day, like every half hour or so.
Torturing yourself.
Yeah, and like when it got to the second night, and we had some like 7 tickets left. I was close to like I'm not a religious person. I was close to praying just for it. It's like 7 more people. Like how many people are in Northern Ireland? Just 7 of them. Please buy tickets.
I caught him in the wrong 7 though. Like,
oh, exactly.
People
that's
have really
the thing.
Hated your shit.
Definitely.
But no, it was cool. We should probably talk about the basis of the show. We'll talk about the performances, but also the basis of so Pig Heart.
Yes.
Obviously, explain it for people who didn't see the show.
Okay.
The name has to come from somewhere.
Okay, so the name is Pig Heart, and what that basically alludes to is that I am going in for open heart surgery soon to repair the tricuspid valve in my heart, and. One of the options when they're going to, if they can repair it, they'll repair it, but if they can't, they're going to need to replace it. And there's two options. There's a mechanical valve or an animal tissue valve, and all the animal tissue comes from pigs, therefore pig heart.
Is this because it, like stem cells aren't full legal, like, so
yeah,
they can't grow you a new one?
It's something like that. Yeah, it's something like that.
So a valve from a pig's heart,
yeah.
If you need it.
Yeah, pretty much, which... Sounds amazing.
See,
it's so sci-fi.
And I was gonna say the more sci-fi option is the mechanical one.
Well, I don't know. I would rather be like half pig hybrid than half like robot.
I was thinking that. Well, technically, then you'd be a cyborg. Mm. So
we need to pause and do research on this before talking about it.
No, we're not gonna pause. I think a lot of people for that 4 seconds we took, people are gonna be like, oh, they're finished.
So, oh, it's done.
No, it's okay. So pig heart. Okay, so from that, so. Yeah, I don't know, man. What's funny about open heart surgery?
Well, there's 4 key. I'm just going to do my closing bit now. Let's just make everybody...
No. Well, I mean, that was so obviously you have your material that you've been developing over the last year and a half. How long have you been?
It's 14 months.
14 months, cool. So you've done that. So this is what you've developed over this to get to this show.
Yeah, so like basically it's just a culmination of like everything that I've written that I think's funny put into a show. Since like my first gig to now, and so far this year it's been like I'm on like 95 gigs.
That's really good.
Yeah, and like this was the like I didn't camp from July last year up until January, Like, I didn't count how many gigs I did, but I've started counting from like New Year's Eve to now. So that's what I want to kind of do every year and just try and get more and more gigs each year.
I wonder if I could do that. I wonder. I've never done a count of how many gigs I've done. I wouldn't know at this point. It's a wee bit late to start going back and
could be
trying to track them. But I did my first hour, which was right before I emigrated to Australia, which was called The Story So Far and Off We Go. And it was two shows, one in Auntie Annie's, which is now The Point, and one in Newry, which used to be the old, it's now called the Phoenix Bar, but it used to be called the Riff Raff Rooms years ago. So I did that, and I had probably no business doing an hour. I got it recorded, and I watched it back about 2 or 3 years after. I was just thinking, oh my God, but it's your first year in, and I was like, I feel like I have enough stuff, and it was sort of very lazy writing on my point, because the basis of the name of The Story So Far and Off We Go was pretty much childhood to I'm immigrating.
Yeah.
So any funny story I had, I could fill in.
Yeah.
Plus material, plus throwaway lines, plus having good supports probably helped. So
who did support for you? Do I know them?
Then Shane Todd did one of them. Paddy McDonald did one of them.
I know both those people.
Yeah, I had like 2 or 3 on. There's a couple of guys, I think. Who else was on? If there's anybody else not doing it. I need to check the poster and even see who, because it's like 8 years ago. But it was great fun. It was good fun to do, and it definitely paid for most of my flight to Australia, so I was happy enough with that.
That's the best. Like, but I fucking give it to charity. I'm an idiot.
I know, you're a mug.
Fucking idiot.
The good thing being as well, obviously, it being heart-related to your own heart, where you give your money to chest, heart, and stroke.
Yeah, chest, heart, and stroke. I've always wanted to do like a charity event for chest, heart, and stroke and stuff like that, because when my dad was brought into hospital, they brought a special life support machine from Germany to the Royal in Belfast for my dad, and that was all money from chest, heart, and stroke that brought that over.
Sweet.
So that's why I was like, yeah, this is definitely the charity I want to give it to. Like, so, and also I'll probably, you know, avail of their services after having the surgery, like, so.
So your dodgy ticker, as well as being a setup, is it a genetic one?
Exactly.
Is it?
Yeah. So I was born with this thing called congenital heart disease. So,
because I always thought like things that happen to your heart were always something that you would do to yourself later. It's bad diet. It's smoking. It's...
Yeah. Well, which I do also have bad diet and smoke quite a lot. But fucking God love my mom. Like, she kind of raised me. Like, I knew there was a problem with my heart, but I didn't realize the severity to it until I went in for a checkup with a cardiologist just by myself, and he basically goes like, yeah, you need to have the surgery or you're going to die in 5 to 10 years. And I was like, what? Like, I had no...
That's pretty on the nose.
I had no idea it was that serious, because I knew, like, from being born till about the age of 9, I had like 5 pulmonary stretches, and that's where they kind of like try and stretch the valve up to regulate it so it works better.
Is that the wee balloon in your heart?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So altogether in my life, I've had like 6 of those, and they're just going like, okay, it just seems to be wearing the valve out rather than actually doing anything good. So that's why they're going in for the repair now. But like, when I found that out, I had like, I don't know, I felt like I was in shock, because I didn't know.
Yeah.
Like, all this kind of stuff was up with me, because my mom, I don't know, I think she just didn't want me to think that there was anything wrong with me growing up.
Okay, well, but I mean, like, you're back playing football and shit now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Were you able to do it? Did it restrict you in any way when you were younger?
No, absolutely not.
You still play football, all the deal?
Yeah.
See, because you have that. Like, I had a cousin, and he was born with 2 holes in his heart.
Mm.
He was born with it, but the thing was pretty much, they're like, right, we're going to wait and see if it heals itself, or we'll do surgery on him later. And then they thought there was something like really, really wrong with him.
Yeah.
But it turned out he was just born half English.
So. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and his heart's fine.
It wasn't just a speech impediment.
Yeah, I know. It just turned out he was half English. I was like, oh, well, that's that fixed it.
Full-blown English.
Yeah. But,
oh, the English, huh?
I don't know. But, I thought that the shows were really good. I think I asked you this at the gig, because I was up and I opened for you and William... Yeah, I emceed, William opened, and then we brought you up, which was great, because they were, number one, they were a really lovely crowd for like a midweek.
Oh, they were nice. Like,
sometimes you're thinking, oh, these people are going to be a bit dour because it's midweek and they might not fancy a beer and a laugh, but they were good, and it was really nice, because it gave me a nice opportunity to do really horrendous jokes.
Yeah. Yeah,
which I never get to do. Anybody gigs with Jordan is great, because if you're just like, well, Jordan's on, like, cool, I can do dirty jokes too.
Yeah, exactly.
But his stuff is horrendous.
Yeah, pretty bad. But like, no, it was kind of weird, like, because when I was on stage and stuff like that, I felt like I was completely dying. I thought none of the jokes were landing, and like everybody was going like, okay, Jordan, we're here to support you, but cut that shit out, like, kind of thing. Yeah. But then watching the video back, because Mark McCartney recorded it for us, like, man, that sounded like the best set I've ever done in my life.
They were great, and it came across that you were enjoying yourself, and you're sort of, you've got that, a bit of a smile, and you're giggling, because you're a lot of your stuff is very, I nearly say, character-based, because you have to kind of be nearly, there's sort of, you have to be kind of half-stony to deliver,
deliver
that one-liner.
Yeah, yeah.
But you could see you starting to laugh and giggle,
yeah.
And you're like, please, I'm trying to finish this here.
Yeah, it was like, because before I started doing stand-up, I did improv quite a lot, but from like a young age I used to collect stand-up special DVDs, and I remember getting the Stephen Wright one and just seeing the way he delivered everything so deadpan.
Yeah,
that's the kind of, I don't know if it influenced me or anything like that, but that's what I kind of gravitate toward, rather than just going like, hey, this is a joke and laughing with him. But sometimes you just can't help it and you start cracking, like.
No, it was good. Obviously it was, I mean, maybe from the improv thing where it's characterization, where you're like, this is what I'm doing, and but it's kind of weird, because I thought they were a lovely crowd and it went really well. I really enjoyed myself as well. Did you notice any difference between the nights? Because new people, new crowd, I mean, you've got your material, but did you do things in the same order, or did your jokes come to you as you have them?
The majority was done in the same order. So it was, but I don't know. I feel like I preferred the second night more after the fact. But I definitely enjoyed it more on stage than the first night.
Yeah.
But I had like really bad tonsillitis, I found out, on the Sunday, and then the show was on Tuesday, and like on the Monday I just didn't speak at all. It was so, like, I couldn't swallow, I couldn't speak, couldn't do anything.
So your heart's knackered and now your throat is too.
Yeah. I thought I was going to have to like pull the show or something like that. But then I was like, nah, fuck it, I'll do it. But it was very, very sore to talk. So in the first night, all you see, like, there was joke, drink half a pint of water. I had like 3 pints of water on stage just to try and like ease this, and I was like a cocodamol, paracetamol every like fucking 4 hours.
That affects so much. That's like your pacing, your timing of delivery of like, is this gonna come across clear enough?
Yeah, I just started talking to the crowd in between the times, just me drinking water, like. Yeah. It was just, you know, that kind of, you know, almost hacky like crowd interaction and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know,
talk just, among yourselves, I'm just getting a drink.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh, that joke was so well, I'm going to reward myself, you know, that kind of shit. But, I definitely preferred the second night as a whole.
That's brilliant. Well, I'm glad to hear I was on the second night anyway.
And why I made it better. That's what I was just about to get to. Yeah.
You're welcome. I was worth the money you paid me for.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. No, it was cool. I was more than happy to do that gig, because number one, it was going to be a nice crowd. Number two, Sunflower is a lovely room.
It's lovely, I love it. Like,
as I mentioned, I will be doing it in the new year.
Yay.
So that's going to be good. So we'll definitely all be back in Sunflower.
Yeah.
And hopefully it'll give us a nice weekend, like end of weekend gig in Belfast, a nice chilled out room on a Sunday night.
None better.
I'm trying new stuff. But I was thinking of directing it as like a pro room, but then using it as like a bringing people through the leagues, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So come on through, there's going to be like 2 or 3 spots every week, like, give me your best 5 to 7 and just roll you out.
Were you thinking about doing like just a booking people, or are you going to do the thing where it's like you have to be there to sign up, kind of like
I'll do bookings, but I'll try and let as many people up as I can.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hopefully between that and McCooey's and Yuri that I run, I'll be able to get enough people gigs. This one of the main things I wanted to do when I came home was we need to keep pushing everybody.
Oh yeah.
As I said, I've worked in other comedy scenes where people are very supportive. Like you've done Chicago and stuff. You've been over in the States. When everybody's supportive, everybody does well quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to, while, you know, strike while the iron's hot, while comedy is an in vogue thing or it is a popular thing, we should try and develop as many people as we can. That means stage time, good clubs especially as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'd really love to sit, anybody who's like from like a regional town like me, I'd love to sit everybody down and be like, this is the business model for how I run McCooey's.
Mm-hmm.
And then we could hopefully...
Yeah, do other places.
Let's do a gig like that in Limavady. Let's do a gig like that in Dungannon. You know, move it out so we can, because I feel that we might run the risk of being very Belfast centric.
Mm.
And from, like, I've gigged all over the world, so I know loads of comics here. But I'm like, can you do that there?
Yeah.
Can you do this anywhere? I want people to get out and.
That's a real worry for me, like, because I've done some gigs in like way more rural towns than what, like, you know, Belfast, Derry, Omagh would be. And that is when I'm most stressed out, because I'm like, oh, they're just not going to like me, kind of thing. And I think I need to get, like, it's just because I don't do that often. And, like, I think if I just, like, kept doing that, then it would be, like, it would become second nature gigging to not necessarily the people that you normally gig in front of in Belfast and stuff like that, where there's, like, this eclectic range of different people, be it students, cultures, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then you're just going out specifically for them for a comedy night kind of thing, which I, you know, I'll take any gig anywhere.
I know.
In the shoebox.
Speaking of taking gigs anywhere, the good news is you've been offered some brilliant gigs.
Oh, yeah.
You're currently opening for Colin Geddes.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And that's lovely theatres, great rooms. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean...
Yeah, it's really, like, you know, Colin's a legend, like, bringing me to Newcastle and stuff like that. And I've got the chance to open for Aaron McCann as well when he was doing the Nerve Centre in Derry and the Roisin Dub in Galway. And they were some of my best gigs I've ever done. And also opening for Mickey Bartlett as well was really cool in Newcastle. So, and I've all the main times that I've opened for people has always been in Newcastle. So between Belfast, Newcastle and Derry, those are like the three places where I've opened for, like, you know, big acts kind of. Yeah. So yeah, a special place in my heart.
Yeah, don't you mind? I mean, obviously, big acts. You've given me in your ears.
Oh yeah, yeah, of course. That was the big one, but I didn't want to, like.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to mention it in case it got awkward between us.
So. By big, I mean I put on a bit of weight.
exactly. I didn't want to mention that either, but sure.
That's fine. Christmas is coming, man. The goose is definitely getting fat.
Yeah.
But no, it was. It's good. I'm really glad to see you doing it, because especially when you're like, I'm 14 months in.
Yeah.
One of the other things as well that I slag you and I'm secretly bitter about is that. You've come in at a time and started comedy when the gigs are great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We have so many good rooms.
Yeah. Like,
I want to develop more, but that's why I'm saying that you're saying, I don't normally do those kind of regional times. That's all there was whenever we started. Mm-hmm. It was like the Pav, any gig anyone was running themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just whatever's happening. We're going to do a Gaelic club in Savile outside near here. I've done all that stuff. So I was, but you know what? Brilliant boot camp.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant training. Definitely.
So, pardon me, whenever I actually get to walk out on stage at, like, a proper nice comedy club, I'm like, this is easier.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is home. But yeah. I think that's weird, because, like, I've gigged over in England a fair wee bit, and it seems like Northern Ireland is harder, like, audiences and stuff like that. Like, when you go over to England, like, I haven't had a bad gig in England.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The I think the good thing about travelling as well is... Definitely take your accent with you.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
My accent's fucked up at the best, like, times, because, like, there's certain words I say and they're like, oh, he definitely sounds like American Canadian kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just say, like, power shower, and they're like, oh, he's definitely...
It's actually pronounced power shower.
Power shower. But, like, I get... Mir.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
If it's the thing, it's for those of you listening abroad, because I actually checked the analytics on this podcast. I have people in Japan, India, and Canada listen to this, in Germany. So we'll do a couple of the words for you.
Okay.
So when we say a power shower, we mean a power shower.
Power shower.
Yeah, yep. Which makes you, that's when you sound American or Canadian. Mm-hmm. It's a power shower.
Power shower.
So we do that. Where I come from, particularly, it's not a car, it's a kiar.
Kiar.
So that's actually one of the things I demonstrate when I'm abroad is how, where I come from, we can actually rhyme the word shower with the word car.
Because
you have a par shower before you get in the car.
That's how it's done.
Nailed it. So yeah, we have a lot of strange pronunciations. And I find when I'm abroad, my accent changes where people can still tell them where I'm from, but it's just the phonetic pronunciations.
Because
when I was doing gigs in Asia, they all speak better English than we do.
Yeah.
So, hang on. So... Is that your taxi?
No.
Sorry, this is the joys of not having a recording studio.
Yeah, and this is something I wanted to bring up. Do you think Joe Rogan's guests on his podcast have to drive around Ulsterville Avenue for like 20 minutes trying to find a parking space before his podcast?
Or? No, I'd imagine Joe Rogan has a limousine that picks them up.
Oh, I would imagine
A Los Angeles airport and takes them there. So,
So.
Yeah, you're a bit... I give you tea. Stop it. No, it's cool. I mean... I think the gigs, the comedy scene here especially, has been brilliant, and it's really nice. Every time I come back, I'm always like really enthusiastic. I'm like, let's go, guys. And then Everyone's like, nah, we're just going to do our own thing. I'm like, ah, okay.
Okay. No, like, I can imagine trying to do it, like, back in, like, times that I've been told, even, like, say, like, during the 2000s and stuff like that, where the gigs are so sparse and stuff like that, because...
Yeah, it was pretty hurt. What is that man listening to?
I think it's Post Malone or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not, obviously you're not picking this up, but we're currently sitting looking out my window at a man. I think that's an Audi.
Mm.
And he appears to be wearing, it's either a matching tracksuit or his pajamas.
It's pajamas.
It's his pajamas, and he's...
But he's in an Audi, so what does that say?
Drug dealer.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. So he's doing drop offs.
Yeah, he really is.
If anybody needs a giant baggy, I know a guy over in South Belfast. But no, yeah, as you were saying, so, you know what, this is the brilliant thing. I don't edit this podcast, so mm-hmm. people are just gonna be listening going, what's an Ulsterville? Yeah, and also there's another one. You pronounced it properly when you said Audi, which is what they say in Germany, whereas it's an Audi where I come from. So this is the danger of how to pronounce things.
That t-shirt is definitely too small for him.
Yeah, that's true as well. He must be freezing, all of them. Mm. Oh, and he's littered. Good lad.
Oh, what a bastard.
Fantastic.
Somebody get his registration.
No,
report him to the council.
No, definitely. I was gonna say, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Don't call the cops.
Exactly.
Time to get shot.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, there's going to be more. There you go. It's like he heard us. He just fired more rubbish out the window.
Yeah.
What an absolute piece of human shit.
Mm.
All right. What a terrible person. And speaking of terrible people, some of these were the kind of people that we used to get the gig to about 5 years ago. So that's all right.
Oh,
yeah.
Another bit.
You'll do some fairly random gigs in different places around here, and that's just. But you've been over to England.
Mm-hmm.
You've been down in Dublin.
Yep,
have you noticed? Have you noticed that? Does your accent change? Do you slow down?
I slow down when I go to England, but not to Dublin.
Not to Dublin.
Yeah, if anything, it speeds up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't slow down so much in Dublin. Probably hit my pronunciations a bit harder and then play up the fact they should be afraid of me.
Exactly.
Which is good fun.
I last time I was down in Dublin. Now, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but is it the Anshaw?
Anshaw.
Anshaw. Okay.
That's pretty good.
Anseo, as yeah. I like to call it.
He went to the Anseo. He also frequents the pub in Belfast, Ansebine. Which is the Anshabine, yeah.
So I went there and did a gig to Danai Cadane runs that, and he's like this really great comic. He's originally from Sweden, but he gigs in Dublin now. He's a great guy and stuff like that, so please book me again. But I did it, and there was like 7 people in and like 10 comedians, and I absolutely died in my hole.
That's a tough crowd. Comedians give you nothing.
Oh, it is tough. And then I went back to my car, and my car was clamped.
I mean, I figured we'd get into the shit gigs in the podcast.
Yeah. Well, you see, the thing is that I've done that room before, and it's been lovely, and it's been really nice when it's like properly packed out on, is it Dame Street, Camden Street, something like that, Camden Street, and it was like, I don't know, it was just, and I went on a date that day too, and the date went pretty well, but then getting like clamped as well was.
It's a dampener.
Yeah, it really is. I'm paying €80 and having to wait like. An hour and a half for them to come take the clamp off when you're just trying to get home, and you've got that drive from Belfast, from Dublin to Belfast, and Belfast to Derry Boy.
Yeah,
it's a lot. Like,
that's a spin, mate.
Yeah, and I didn't get paid for the gig either, so it cost me €80 to do it, or €80 to do it.
See, this is one of the great things about obviously only been in for a year and a bit is you still have that great enthusiasm for driving everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm at this point like petrol money. I can't go without.
No, anybody in Cork that wants to book me, I'll do a free gig. No bother.
Yeah.
No bother.
Have you been to Cork yet?
Not yet. I got booked to do, what was it? It was a Coco Club, but it was the day of the Super Bowl, and I had a gig in Belfast that night too.
So you're like, I don't
miss the Super Bowl. And I've stressed that to the surgeons. So if they give me a date and I'm going to miss the Super Bowl, I'm like, can we do it sooner? Or, you know.
Super Bowl, January or February?
It's the first weekend in February.
First weekend in February?
Yeah, it was first Sunday in February.
Who's the halftime show this year?
I don't know, actually.
Do they announce it or is it a surprise?
No, I think they've announced it. But I have no idea. I watch it for the football there.
Fair play, yeah, because it's a lot. The only thing I stay up that late for and I haven't done in years is WrestleMania. So.
Oh yeah,
it's March, I think. But I used to do that when I was younger. I'd stay up, watch WrestleMania, and then go to school the next day with the eyes hanging out of my head. Mm. What was I thinking?
I used to do that all the time. That's why I got such bad GCSE results, because my mum was thinking like I was staying up revising, but I was watching like the Canucks play the fucking Phoenix Coyotes or something like that.
Some random game.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's all I did. Like,
but I No, what? Why was my GCSEs were, I was predicted like all A's,
mm-hmm.
and I got an A, a B, and seven C's because I did my GCSEs in 2002 and Ireland was in the World Cup.
Ah, you see?
And it was big drama. Roy Keane left the camp, and then also, I didn't need much of an excuse to watch football, so my mum would phone.
That was like Korea, Japan, wasn't
yeah,
it?
My mum would phone and be like, are you studying? I'm like, I am. I'm definitely not watching Cameroon play Ghana here. Phenomenal game, 3-2. So yeah, that's what I was doing when I was supposed to be revising that summer, but World Cup on, not my fault.
Exactly.
FIFA, corrupt bastard.
Exactly, yeah.
Scrub exams.
Corrupting youth. And...
But you have, I mean, have you found your first year? Have you enjoyed it?
I loved it, yeah. Yeah, I think I didn't know if I had any like preconceived notions of the scene before going into it and stuff like that, but I found it like a real, like there's no dickheads.
Well, I think if you come in, if you're sort of professional, friendly, and good at your job, mm-hmm. it's easier.
Yeah, well, I found it like don't get me wrong, there is some dickheads that like, you know, started and stuff like that, but they don't seem to last.
No, I think people coming into, there are a lot of people who come into comedy for different reasons. I would talk to people, because you get chatting with a lot of people after the gigs, and I don't think they realise that we're on stage, it's an act.
Mm.
People come off and maybe they're kind of disappointed that we're not just firing out zingers all the time.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm like, I'm actually just a normal dude. I was, this is written, this is a written piece,
mm.
and I get up and perform it, and then, but sometimes then people get into that thing where you're just in a bar having a beer and then people are like, oh, you're a comedian. And
yeah.
then they're like, I have to be funnier than you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't care. This isn't, I'm so like, much. I don't even care if people are funnier than me at
yeah.
gigs. I just
yeah.
want to do my show.
Yeah,
proper.
It's not a dick measuring contest. Like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Just because you're funnier doesn't mean that you're a better person.
Yeah, pretty much. Weirdly enough, one of the things I don't talk about on stage is my dick, because no issues. Like, so what
exactly.
are we? But I would be chatting to people, and a guy said to me one time, he was just like, yeah, all my friends say I'm really funny and that I should do comedy. I was like, I'm going to stop you there. You've got friends.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not cut out for this shit.
Exactly. I think that's weird because
if you're normal, don't be taking my work.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have like the necessary mental health illnesses that you need to do stand-up comedy.
Exactly.
But like, I was never the funny one in my friend group.
I'm definitely not.
No,
I have four of my best friends are the guys that I still went to school with. I'm like 34 and I still hang out with the guys I went to school with. They're probably mostly all funnier than me.
Yeah. 100%.
But we all work in a group situation, so that's good fun.
Mm.
But I think, yeah, I know lots of people funnier than me as well. And when I go down home as well, if I'm out for beers with my brothers and stuff,
mm.
like, you're a comedian? I'm like, yeah. Do something funny. I'm like, just trying to watch the football.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to watch like Blackburn play Derby.
Yeah, I'm like, you're not getting a freebie off me. But it's, no, that's cool. It's very good as well, because I'm trying to think, when I met you just when I get home, did I?
Mm.
I'm home like,
I remember
months.
The first time I saw you was in Liquor XXX.
Oh yeah, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Was I MCing that night?
I think so, and it's when your woman came in and...
Super drunk lady?
Aye, yeah, yeah.
That was a tough gig, like.
Mm.
Such a weird wee gig, because we're sort of in the corner.
Mm. But it was lovely, like.
Yeah, no, it was the position of the room, didn't make sense, but the crowd were sound.
Yeah.
It got to a point, actually, this particular gig we're talking about, I was MCing, a drunk lady came in just for a drink, not realising we were in the middle of a show, and just
mm-hmm.
started talking to her two mates.
Yeah, and like the bar's so small that the gig was the whole bar, you couldn't just
yeah.
go in and get a pint kind of thing.
Which kind of eventually led to them being shouted out of the place by the crowd.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
So, you know what, actually, that's a win for the comedians, like, so...
Oh, 100%.
I think we did well there.
Yeah.
But you've got... So you've done Pigheart, you're doing the gigs with... How long are you doing on the Getty shows?
I've done two so far, and he's talking about doing the rest of the tour and stuff like that, which will be fun.
You're doing like 15 to 20s?
Yeah, 20 minutes.
Sweet.
So, yeah.
That's such a nice mm. tidy crowd. Someone else's crowd, very busy, rock mm. up to your bit. No, nobody's getting any preconceived notion of you.
Nope.
A few new followers on the old Instagram and Twitter.
38 after the first gig. And everyone's like, oh, sweet. Yeah.
That's good, because you're gigging to Geddes' crowd are very... very internet savvy.
Oh yeah, 100%.
So they're all over his podcasts and his videos, so that's
mm.
cool. That's a nice one to get on. And yeah,
yeah, and it seems like the people who go out to see Colin don't mind my stuff, like,
I was gonna say his
yeah.
stuff can be a bit more edgy, a bit dirtier.
Oh,
so
yeah, yeah. So
your
it kind of aligns itself well with my kind of stuff. But I remember that, like, one of the first times I did Newcastle, I did that joke about the Jeremy Kyle show
mm-hmm.
being cancelled, and it was the first time that anybody has squared up to me because of a joke.
Really?
Yeah. So the joke is, people say suicide.
Hang on. Was this the gig you did with Colin, or a different gig?
A different gig.
Oh, thank
different
God.
Gig. So the joke itself is, I'm not going to use it anymore, so I'm just going to burn it.
Okay.
people say suicide's never the answer unless the question is, how'd you get the Jeremy Kyle show cancelled?
Right.
So did that. Great response from the audience and stuff like that. You know, it may be like, you know, well, comedy subjective, so you may not find it funny or whatever. But this guy comes up to me in the smoking area and we were just out the back having a smoke. And he goes like, you know, suicide's never funny. And then I had that Frankie Boyle line in the back of my head, well, then kill yourself and save the laugh.
Yeah.
But I didn't say it. And I was just like, oh, okay, sorry if you got offended, blah, blah, blah. And then he like properly squared up to me and goes like, no, I don't think you understand, like, and stuff like that. So that was the first experience I had where I was like, okay, maybe I doubted myself, going like, am I just saying this to be edgy and stuff like that? And
that I was going to say, with your particular brand of stuff, mm-hmm. is, and especially doing being in for the 14 months, because you've done so many gigs, which is brilliant, so, mm-hmm. so that'll probably space you out. I'd say it would have took me maybe 2 or 3 years to do that many gigs.
Mm-hmm.
So you've crammed a lot into that time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's figuring out the difference. And I'm sure you notice when you go to open mics, a lot of people want to sort of be like a Frankie Boyle sort
yeah.
of character.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But that man is a genius writer.
Mm.
So it's sort of, it's... Jimmy Carr is probably the same. Joke mm-hmm. writers who can touch on the edge of your stuff. The thing is, you never know your audience. You don't know what people have
exactly.
been through. And you've got 100 people. There's going to be all sorts of, you know, sex, religion, creed, whatever. People have had their own different experiences. So mm-hmm. you just have to go at it. And I think the main thing to do is, if you're not particularly going out to offend, don't apologize.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I do anything that rough. Normally, I think I have like one, I have one joke where I mention abortion, but it's mm. not a joke about abortions.
Yeah,
it's a joke about our health system.
Mm.
So you know that it's so people. Oh, you said that. I'm like, yes, but if you listen to the context of the joke,
yeah,
people can take anything you say, especially because you do such short, punchy stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, straight
they can
out
take,
of context.
They can go, oh, this is what he said. I'm
yeah.
like, that's one piece.
Mm.
That doesn't fit into the whole act of what
oh,
he was
of
doing.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, 100%. But yeah, I think if you go to see open mics, and I noticed this. I thought this was very different when I was there because I was used to watching, before I get into stand-up, my favourite stand-ups were Eddie Izzard, Billy Connolly and Dave Allen.
Mm-hmm.
So like a storyteller, Billy Connolly swore a bit, Eddie Izzard. So my style is not really like any of those three,
mm-hmm.
but I love their stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I never knew who sort of some of the rougher comics was. So, but I would see people get up and there was no cleverness to it. There was no art in it. They were just trying to say the worst thing they
yeah.
could think of.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I was very conscious about, that I don't want to be the person who's just saying the most, like, just outlandish shit, thinking that, you
and
know.
Hiding it in a joke.
Yeah, yeah, hiding it in a joke. I like, the main aim, like, the only currency is being funny, like. And I just think it's that added, like, if you can take this subject material that people may find offensive and stuff like that and actually construct a really like well-constructed joke
yeah.
and stuff like that, then that just makes it that much better for the audience, for you, for and like growth and progression as a stand-up comedian. I think that's very important to like look at those subjects and don't go like, oh no, anything's off the table, you can't talk about that kind of thing. So that's the kind of like the mindset I go into now.
Yeah.
Like after with the experience of like having that guy like come up to me and stuff like that, and then but then other people come up, like it isn't like universally negative, the stuff
yeah.
that people come up and say to you, they go like, oh my god, I can't believe you said that, that's fucking hilarious, stuff like that, about subject material that, you know, normal people wouldn't talk about.
But anything, any sort of art form is subjective, and one of the things that pisses me off is, I mean, especially with sort of stuff like funding
mm-hmm.
and the arts, what we do is not considered an art form.
Mm.
Now, I can't ballet dance, but I think ballet is an art form.
Oh yeah.
I know a lot of people who can't do comedy, so it's a fucking art form.
Mm.
We practice at this, we write, we develop, we change. This is something that takes years of experience
mm.
to get to a level at. So for people to not like something, same point. There's people who don't like Apocalypse Now or The Godfather or
yeah.
things that are seen as the highest standard of cinema, you know what I mean, of
yeah.
film. That's in that particular art form. Or
mm-hmm.
somebody who doesn't like, you know, like some of the biggest selling albums of all time. People might not like Rumours by Fleetwood Mac. They're wrong.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you know what I mean? So that's, it's subjective.
Oh, 100%.
Just because 40 million people like something doesn't mean everything.
But I think it's very different in terms of stand-up comedy, because there's no, like, if you're playing guitar, you can sit at home for months on end and practice playing guitar until you are like one of the best guitar players in the entire world. For stand-up comedy, you need that live audience to try and get to see if anything's working, because me and you could sit and write a full hour of stuff right now and we're going like, okay, that's ready to take the stage. You don't know that because you haven't been able to like gig it long enough.
It's an instantly reviewable art form.
Yeah.
It's either funny or it's not.
Yeah.
This I think the scary one as well is because crowds are every night's different, there's so many different factors that affect how we do stuff and what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this has happened yet. This is terrifying when it happens. A joke that's worked 50 times and then inexplicably gets nothing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So people talk about when they're writing new jokes, sometimes in comedy, some people will use a rule of three where they'll try it three times
mm-hmm.
to see how it goes. You know, if you do it, you might do it once, you might need to be changed or developed.
Yeah,
do it a second time, tweak it a bit, edit bits. Do it a third time. If it's ready and it's good, it's maybe in the set. But I have jokes that you've done 50 times and then for some reason one night nothing mm-hmm. and then you're like uh-oh,
yeah,
that's panic inducing. I'm more 100%. Panicked at that than I am about doing new stuff.
Yeah, like for example I was doing Newcastle there on Friday night and I ended with the closer that I had for my Pickhart show and ended like all the beats were there and stuff like that. The timing was 100%. And they were laughing like in the intended punchlines and stuff like that. But then I did it in Lisburn the next day. Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. It was so weird. And it's a bit I've only done maybe 5 or 6 different times on stage. And it would be one of the longer bits that I do. But yeah, it was just...
That's scary because it works 5 times
yeah,
and then...
Yeah.
And six.
It's just like... What's the issue here?
It gives me chills thinking about that. And I hope if there's other comedians listening to this, you understand what we're talking about. And people who don't do comedy, I hope you understand that weird feeling of, yeah, it's like, oh, this always works.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't now.
Yeah.
But you're writing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do so many gigs, I'm sure it gives you a chance to chop and change. Have you got much stuff you dropped?
Oh, a lot
yeah.
of stuff. When I was... So my first gig, it was like 7 minutes in the Pav. And then when I went to Chicago, when I was at IO, I had a brand new set written for like, obviously like American audiences and stuff like that.
What's IO?
Improv Olympic.
Okay.
So I went over there for a month to study improv. And I was gigging while I was there, like doing open mics and stuff like that. So I did Annoyance Theatre, The Shithole, loads of different places like that. So it was completely, and like I had kind of like, I had been to the States quite a lot, so I had like a lot of references and stuff like that that the people in the States would get, rather than me having to explain, you know, what Carrie Duff is and stuff like that. Yeah, you know, so
anyone in from Ards?
Exactly.
Shit.
And like it was weird going from like, yes, I know all this stuff works, but it's not going to work for someone that's from like Des Moines, Iowa, who's come to see the show, yeah. like because it just because it worked in Belfast and stuff like that. And I remember all over in the plane, that was my one, like I wasn't even worried about going to the actual, like, you know, studying for this class. It was all just trying to get material so I can use it in open mic kind of scenario. Mm-hmm. But then a lot of the stuff I do talk about in my normal set, it's transferable, so you could do it to anyone and they would probably understand with like a base knowledge of like popular culture.
We talked earlier about why people do comedy and why they shouldn't do comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I think, one of the big things that a lot of people get into their comedy is their trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my trauma is probably I'm an attention-seeking middle child and my dad's an alcoholic.
Mm.
Do you think your trauma is that your dad's dead or that you're a West Ham fan?
Both.
It's both?
Very, very much both.
Are those both hereditary?
Yeah, the funny thing about supporting West Ham is I do it out of spite of my dad. Because in 1999, my dad took me, my brother and my mum over to Old Trafford to watch West Ham against United.
Okay.
And so we were in the Trafford Centre before and we were in this toy shop and it's just before Christmas. And I can't remember what it was. I think it was an old, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle doll type thing. I was like, oh, fucking want that.
They're action figures, okay. They're not dolls.
Oh, okay, sorry. So, just want to nip that in the bud right now. I was like, oh, Dad, picked it up. I was like, Dad, can I get this? And he was like, no, it's too close to Christmas. And I was like, well, fuck you. Because he was a huge United fan. I was like, well, fuck you, I'm supporting West Ham today. West Ham won that day, and I've been a West Ham fan ever since.
You've got some fucking issues.
And yeah,
they do have a nice new stadium though, to be fair.
Oh no, it's shite.
Is it?
It's awful. It's ripped the absolute heart out of the team.
You prefer the old
I could literally talk about you know, the new London Stadium for about an hour and a half.
We'll do another podcast.
Where I'm just slabbering about it.
But what was the old ground? Was it Upton?
Yeah, Upton Park. Upton ground, Park? Yeah.
But it was quite literally falling to bits, wasn't it?
It had a rustic feel to it.
Well, I mean, Craven Cottage is something to go. It's one of the oldest grounds.
Yeah, and it's lovely. I love Craven Cottage. Yeah. I don't know. I'm against modern football, man.
Okay, that's perfectly fine. When I was chatting to Darren Craig a couple of weeks ago, we got into a Man United Liverpool Cahill, and it was I think at that point a lot of people probably switched off the podcast. So if we're going to do a proper football podcast, I'm going to have to advertise this football podcast.
True.
Keep this one to comedy because it's just.
I can do that.
That's okay. So you're a West Ham fan despite your dead father.
Yes.
Jesus.
Oh well, you see when you put it like that, it makes me sound like a bad person.
I know, I shouldn't say that it makes you sound like a bad person. I know you're an awful person. I suppose, what next? What's any 2020 plans?
Oh, yeah.
Another show, more travel?
Yeah, more travel. Heart surgery first. And then the Glasgow International Comedy Festival on St. Patrick's Day in Glasgow.
Sweet. So anybody listening in Scotland and you want to go see...
Please, yeah.
Do you want to go see a wee British guy on St. Patrick's Day?
British guy? I identify as Northern Irish.
Is that a thing? Me and Cormac talk about this.
I don't know. Like,
have we invented this or is this something?
No, okay. So like, I don't see myself as... I don't identify as British or anything like that. I'm from like a Protestant background and stuff like that. But, well, the name Robinson. But I don't know. I find it's a weird circumstance because people in like my generation growing up in the shadow of the Troubles and stuff like that. And they see like... I think we're more subjective where we can like look at it. Whereas like, okay, yeah, this whole kind of thing, we can understand like both sides of the thing and we just want to identify it as like almost like a third party kind of thing.
Yeah, sort of as like, take me out of this.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to be neutral by doing this.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, fair play to you, because you're talking about the shadow of the Troubles. I remember the bright lights of the Troubles and it was shit. So fair play to you.
Although, just round the corner is where I lived for 5 years in boarding school.
Methody.
Yeah, and I remember... getting pulled out of school, getting in a bus and going to, I can't remember, I think it was Prairie Park, Downey House, the prep school, because there was a bomb scare outside the school. And this was, 2005?
I said Methody?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Mm. Suppose we did have a spate of firebombs in Uri in the...
last week.
I think it was the mid-2000s when I was working for Dunn's. Because myself, it was early 2000, so me and a buddy of mine were working there in about, I want to say about 2004, because I was just finished school. And the rule was that if you got evacuated, you had to hang about outside for about 45 minutes to an hour. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, look, they're going to be checking the place, either go home or go get your lunch or something.
Yeah.
So me and my buddy went to a pub around the corner and got our lunch, but we also got 4 pints. And then got a phone call that it was safe to come back.
Oh.
We were like, he hasn't phoned, we could probably have a couple more pints. We're not going back to work. Mm. So yeah, I did a wee shift in Dunn's, half cut. Don't work there anymore. It's okay to admit that. But yeah, it was. I was gonna say, it was a good laugh.
Yeah, it sounded it. Definitely did.
But you have, that's okay. So you're doing Glasgow on Paddy's Day. It'd be brilliant. I was in Glasgow on Paddy's Day when I was doing roadie for a band called the Dangerfields, and they were opening up for Stiff Little Fingers in the Barrowlands.
That was a good couple of years ago. Great gig.
That was like 11 or 12 years ago. But I walked out on stage, and that classic moment happened where. They think the roadies the support band.
Yeah.
So I walked out on stage just to plug in and everybody cheered and I was like, thanks very much. And then somebody threw a bottle of Buckfast at me. So they missed though, so it was okay. Thank Christ. So where's the gig on in Glasgow?
The Dram. I believe it's in the West End. Woodlands Road.
Okay.
And I'm bringing William Thompson over, the guy who opened for me for the second night of Pickhart. So he's going to do 20, I'm going to do 40, and we're going to have a good time.
It's pretty good, man. It's always good. Paddy's Day is always really good elsewhere.
Yeah.
This year for Paddy's Day, I was in Singapore.
Hey.
Doing gigs, which was nice.
What was it like? What was the Guinness like?
The Guinness, I think I had one or two just for old time's sake, and then swapped on to something local.
Oh, yeah.
It's mental. They have a St. Patrick's Day parade in Singapore.
That's crazy.
There's loads of Paddies out there, and there's a Gaelic football team
in Singapore.
Jeez. The Singapore Lions. And I met actually met a guy who's from the village up the road from me.
Sure.
Yeah, because I was wearing my Gaelic jersey from my club at home. Uh-huh. And it's written in Irish along the back, along the shoulders, and I felt somebody like with their finger reading my shoulders. I was like, hey, touching. And then the dude was like, "You from the Summon?" I was like, "No, I'm from Bessbrook, but my dad's from the Summon." He was like, and then he said, he asked me, he was like, "Do you know Stephen Matthews?" I was like, "That's my brother, yeah." So 6,000 miles from home. And
exactly.
Somebody's like, "Let me screw with your bra." I was like, "Oh, how long are you here?" 6 years. Oh my God. So yeah, it was a guy who played for the Gaelic team, so I ended up going drinking with him.
Class.
So yeah, that was my random. I've had some random Paddy's Days doing gigs. I did one in Onslow in Western Australia, which is a sheep town, population 500, but they have a mine site nearby. So mm-hmm. when I was living in Perth, they flew me to the mine for St. Patrick's Day to do a gig. And I squeezed more money out of them because I said, "Look, I'm Irish, this is St. Patrick's Day.
I'm in Highland right now, yeah.
This is a cultural day for me."
Exactly.
So they threw me an extra $500.
Hey, that's how it's done.
They flew me to the gig, uh-huh. gave me as much beer as I wanted, and then flew me home the next day. I've never felt like more of a rock star. It was so good. I was class, and then collector checking out the door. I was like, "This is brilliant."
I'm really annoyed that I wasn't doing stand-up when I was in Australia.
Oh yeah,
you would have loved to done some gigs. I did one improv gig at Lazy Susan's in Perth,
which is where I've done stand-up.
Yeah, not weird. That's crazy.
Different times apart.
But yeah, there was three people in the crowd, and I was doing it with like a Polish guy and this old Australian lady, and it was.
Was that what was that like a trial night or something, or like an open mic improv? Is that a thing?
No, it was like so they were running this like course. So
the big hoo ha.
Huh.
The big hoo ha is the improv group over there.
I have no idea.
There you go. I know that for going to. They used to do every Thursday in Lizzie Susan's, and the comedy nights were on Friday night then.
Mm. But like no, we just joined up for like a week of just rehearsals, and then just went in to do a show. Three people. It was awful. Did short form. Never again.
I you're gonna have to teach me this improv stuff because I know there's long form.
That's
and short
another,
form.
That's another like.
It's another podcast. Yeah, would you just start your own podcast and I'll come on and ask you questions.
Yeah, but I'm like really shit at talking to myself, and then I can't like trust other people to be like free when I'm free.
So well, I was gonna say you don't have to talk to yourself. You can come in and do it.
Mm.
Speaking of questions, did we get any?
Yes, yeah, we got a good couple of questions.
So it's really weird. So I said to Jordan, "Do you want to come to my podcast?" And he was like, "Yeah, do you want me to ask anybody if there's any questions on my Instagram?" And I was thinking,
because I'm Instagram famous now. Yeah.
I would hope that I would have enough questions for you, but yeah, fire away. We'll see what we get.
Okay, so is it Ems Morgan? Somebody who follows me on Twitter.
Oh, Ema Morgan. She's from Newry.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she's right.
So yeah, under what condition? I'm going to ask you these questions.
Oh, okay. Okay. How the tables have turned.
Exactly.
My tiny coffee table.
So, famous stand-up comedian William Thompson asks, "Why are you both such cocksuckers?"
Why am I such a cocksucker?
I think it's because I didn't have a great relationship with my family growing up.
Mine's probably a neediness thing.
Probably.
I hope that satisfied your curiosity, William.
Yeah, he's probably not even going to listen. He read a question and wouldn't listen. That's the type of guy he is.
Perfectly fine.
Exactly. That's why he's not getting paid for Glasgow.
Do you know who would do that? A cocksucker.
Hey, there we go. Under what conditions do you treat yourself to a sit-down pee?
If I have to check my phone, maybe do some emails. Pure laziness.
I don't know. I think the conditions need to be right, so it needs to be either a toilet in someone else's house or my own toilet. I'm not going to do it in like a McDonald's or anything like that.
Absolutely agree.
Yeah. So, but apart from that, just when the mood strikes, you know?
So clean conditions number one.
Clean conditions number one. Sanitary conditions.
Gotcha.
But that's about it.
Sit down, pee. I mean, is it a treat or is it just? It might just be laziness.
It takes the weight off your knees, like. But apart from that. You know,
sit down, treating yourself to sit down pee. Well, I mean, the ladies have to sit down pee all the time.
Of course.
So, does that mean you're always treating yourself? And they complain when I don't buy them flowers.
Hey, there we go. What's your favourite scene in Fight Club?
Favourite scene in Fight Club? Either Bob's bitch tits.
Yeah, bitch tits is mine.
With the big hug, or. Well, I mean, the reveal's great.
I haven't watched it in years.
The reveal's great of I don't know, is this a spoiler alert? If you haven't seen Fight, you know what, it's been 20 years.
If you haven't seen Fight Club,
Seen Fight Club, we're not friends anyway. The big reveal's great, and when it does the cutback to all the previous scenes, that's pretty awesome. Or I think for comedy purposes, you can't beat the scene where he splices the big dick into all
course.
Movies.
Of course.
So yeah. Hope that's good. That's my three favorite. Oh Jesus, I could do a podcast on it probably.
It's just splinter groups of different podcasts.
I'm making notes.
Are you going to see Doug Stanhope next year?
When's he on?
I have no idea.
I need to Google this because I have a wedding to go to next year in Croatia, so if I have no money I ain't going to anything.
Mm. Yeah, I was just saying before the podcast started there, I went to go see, like, I love going to, like, big acts and stuff like that, or people I consider big. So I was absolutely raging. I missed out on going to Jim Jefferies this weekend down in Dublin, but I will go to anyone that I find mildly amusing.
I saw Jim Jefferies in Australia.
Oh, and was that in Perth?
Yeah, in Perth Arena. And I actually saw Doug Stanhope in Fremantle.
Oh, really?
A couple of years ago, yeah. It was a small enough gig, a couple of hundred people.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. He was really good.
Sounds...
Two of my mates opened for him and said he's one of the nicest dudes ever.
Oh, I can imagine. Like, I know he has that kind of like air about him where you go like, oh, he'll probably, you know, rip into you, but he seems like a really nice guy.
Oh, he's cool. Is that all our questions?
Yeah, that's all the questions I got.
I think we did pretty well.
Yeah.
So you have, next year we'll do a wee recap before we head off. So the recap is Glasgow, definitely.
Glasgow International Comedy Festival.
But we don't know when the surgery is? Nope. Before or after?
Don't know. The NHS.
You know what? I'm not going to complain.
I love the NHS.
I love the NHS too.
I'm a big fan. Please don't privatise it.
Dude, I was going to say, you need to get that operation before that happens.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you might as well go and carry heavy rock into a lake.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Wear concrete shoes.
Yeah. But, okay, so at present, you can't make too many plans until you find out.
Not overly, and to be honest, you know, probably agreeing to do Glasgow wasn't the smartest idea in the world, but I'm still...
You're going to have time off as well.
Exactly, yeah, I'm going to have about a month off from stand-up.
In hospital, or you get to go home?
Be a couple of weeks in hospital, then go home.
Oh, cool, I'll come visit you and bring grapes.
Yeah, it's only around the corner, is
it? Are you going to be at the city hospital?
No,
Royal.
Royal. Has one of the best cardiology departments in Europe, apparently.
I would imagine so.
And, like, we surely should be advertising that more than, like, you know, Derry having City of Culture or some shit like that.
Probably because all the doctors are not from here.
Hey.
Bloody immigrants coming in here and doing a brilliant job.
Saving our lives, bastards.
But yeah, I'm trying to think what is even coming up this week. We've got, I'm doing Pug Uglies on Thursday, I think, is my gig schedule. And you've got, where's your gigs with Colin this week?
So, hopefully, Coleraine, Dan Patrick.
Riverside Theatre, Down Arts Centre, and...
I think that's it.
They're two really lovely theatres.
I'm really excited. Like, doing Lisburn, the Island Arts Centre, was really cool. Because that was my first proper experience doing, like, a proper theatre, which was really nice. And then I've got a charity gig in Fintna. I'm doing the roast battle next Monday at the Pav. And I'm doing the Fraser Rob charity roast on the 28th. And then Yuri on the 20th also.
Yeah, 20th of December, as I advertised in the last podcast, the 12 comedians of Christmas.
I'm one of them.
So it's going to be probably the usual tenorin, and then I might throw out a wee bucket and we'll do a wee charity thing while we're there. Because
hey.
'Tis the season, give to those who need it.
Exactly.
But we have, I'm trying to think what else is coming up. You've got those gigs on. Yeah, that's kind of brings us to the end of the year. That's kind of scary.
Isn't it mental, though?
Yeah.
And I'm going to hit 100 gigs projected. I'm going to hit 100 gigs by the end of the year.
Sweet. That's fantastic.
Which is really good.
An average of, what, 3 a week?
Yep, something like that.
Yeah, 3
points
like, a week.
And my goal at the start of the year was to do 52 gigs in 52 weeks.
That's good. Yeah, a gig a week's pretty good. And that's inclusive of... That's everything. That's your open mics, that's your booking, so you're doing really well.
And I haven't counted like improv gigs, which I still do quite a lot of.
That's true.
As well. Oh yeah, fuck it, plug them. Belfast Improv Theatre, Shaftesbury Square, Accidental Theatre, every Sunday.
Sometimes, every Sunday?
Every single Sunday. Sometimes Friday, but every Sunday.
Okay.
So you've come see me make stuff up there.
And even though you probably have more followers than me, what's your socials so we can tell people?
Jordan Robinson Comedy on Facebook and JRQuench32 on Instagram.
JRQuench32.
Do you want to know the story of that name?
Yeah, I mean, 32 counties, United Ireland, tell me.
No, 32. So 32 is my lucky number because Carlos Tevez wore that for West Ham.
Gotcha.
And JR Quench, do you remember the old Sprite ads where it was like the Shaft character, but it was JD Quench?
Yes.
My initials are JR.
Fair enough.
And I culturally appropriated Quench.
So JR Quench 32. If you're on the Instagram, where hopefully if you have picked this podcast up, that it'll probably be where you see it. You might not see it on mine.
Yeah.
What's my usual is Darren Matthews Comedy on Instagram, and then the new page, I suppose, which is the Sunflower Comedy Club Belfast.
Give that a follow.
Give that a follow, and then keep your eye for the old lineups that I'll be posting up on my own page, which is Darren Matthews Comedy and Podcast. That's on the Facebook. God, I'm old.
Yeah.
Right. Jordan, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
That was the quickest art ever.
Yeah, that genuinely felt like 5 minutes.
Right, we're going to go and drink more tea and then lament how we have spoken too fast for people living abroad. Jordan, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
You're supposed to say goodbye, Jordan, but that's the joke.
Goodbye, Jordan.
It's too late now. Thanks for listening, guys. Like, share, subscribe, and I'll chat to you soon.
Bye.